Thank everyone for joining us. We should be getting started in the next little bit. Thank you for your patience. And if you haven't already, please check out nfibflyin.com. It's got all the information about our virtual fly-in we will be having August 17th through the 19th. We've got a jam-packed agenda for everyone, so please check that out. If you've never been to a DC fly-in before, this is your chance to get the virtual experience. So thank everyone for joining us. It looks like we have the Lieutenant Governor on the line. Thank you for joining us, Lieutenant Governor. If you could hit *6 to unmute, and Greg, take it away.
I'm with you.
Good morning,
hey,
Lieutenant Governor. This is Greg Thompson. And
good morning, Greg. How are you?
Great. How are you? We appreciate you joining us this morning for the series of Teletown Hall meetings. I know you have been very generous with your time over the past years with hosting or joining us for in-person small business roundtables across the state, and with the I guess I'm not going to say the new norm, because I hope it won't be the norm for long, but this is how we want to allow give our members an opportunity to talk with our statewide elected officials. But let me just briefly again say thank you and make an introduction to our members. Lieutenant Governor Forrest is from Charlotte and graduated from University of Charlotte with a degree in agriculture and not agriculture, architecture. I was looking at something else, architecture, and he is a businessman and architect, and became president of one of the largest architectural firms in the state, and was elected to lieutenant governor in 2012, and. As Lieutenant Governor, he presides over the Senate and sits on the State Board of Education and the State Board of Community Colleges, and has a lot of experience in working with issues for small businesses and the business community. And we are very fortunate to have the Lieutenant Governor with us this morning to talk to us about whatever he would like to. We have some questions from our members. There's a lot going on in the state and has been for some time now, and I just would like to say again thank you for what you do for the state and for the small business community, and turn it over to you for your comments, and then we'll do a few Q&A.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Greg, and thanks to everybody on the call and NFIB for all you do for small businesses as well. I mean, you guys are a great advocate for the small business community, and we're very thankful for that, and that's what makes our world go around. So I'm happy to be an advocate as well. As you mentioned, Greg, my background is architecture. I practiced architecture for 22 years. I was president, office president, and a partner with the largest firm in the state, and I loved every minute of that until I was called to serve people in North Carolina. So I stepped out of architecture and ran for lieutenant governor, and here we are now, 8 years later, running for governor. Time flies when you're having a blast. So, you know, who could have imagined the situation that we are in today, culturally and economically in our state? North Carolina, I believe, is the greatest state in our country. America's the greatest state, a country in the world. And I think that puts us in a very, very high bar. So we have a great reputation to uphold for business here in North Carolina, and we got to get it back on track, and we have to do that fast. I think you would all agree with me that North Carolina was the best thing going in the country, maybe in the world, up until a few months ago, and now that's all turned upside down. So we're going to have quite a bit of work cut out for us as we move forward. I just believe it's time in our state to move beyond a culture of fear and panic related to the coronavirus. We know, I believe, how to live with it. I believe that we can protect those most vulnerable amongst us. And we can get back to business at the same time. We need to do that through transparency and honesty and providing the whole picture and the true picture to the people of North Carolina about what's going on here. You know, we've had maybe 130,000 cases of coronavirus positive tests for coronavirus. There's about maybe 20,000 active. Out of the 20,000 that are active, maybe 10,000 have symptoms based on national numbers. Out of that, there's, you know, any given time, 1,000 in the hospital who are really in bad shape with the coronavirus. That's out of 10.5 million people, 0.00009, basically, is what it comes out to be if you do the math, percentage of the population. So that being said, nothing against the fact that we have to fight the virus, and we do, and we'll continue to do that. But you're talking about in North Carolina shutting down one of the leading economies in the world, and that has ripple effects across the board. And I just believe we need to get it up and running again. I believe we need to get our students back in schools again. And, Greg, you mentioned it, not get back to the new normal, but get back to normal. Normal is what made America great, what made us the greatest country in the world, and we need to get back to that. So we have a lot of work cut out for us. I think, you know, we could talk about in your questions, certainly the General Assembly, federal policy, all those kind of things. I'll do my best to answer those questions. But I know you all see the fallout from what's going on. I've traveled the state since the beginning of this. I've talked to your members. I've talked to people personally, one-on-one across the state, and seen the devastation from businesses being shut down and people that aren't going to reopen again. When we put our campaign on hold back in March, my wife and I started traveling around. We actually started giving money away to people, to these small business owners, to try to help them navigate this shutdown. And the stories were just devastating. They still are. So anyway, with that, I think I'll stop. You get my gist, Greg. You know where I stand on this. And let's open up to questions and see where we go with it.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. I know that you have been sitting on since you've been on the in your role as Lieutenant Governor on the Board of Community Colleges. And have been a strong advocate for probably what I would say, and I think you would agree, probably one of the best community college systems in America. And you have worked really hard to make it one of the best systems in your role on that board. We had a question from Sarah who lives in Lincolnton and owns a florist, and she said, Lieutenant Governor Forrest, I think you've worked a lot with the community colleges for several years. And she asked, can small businesses like my own use the local community colleges or the she said, I think they have business centers to help with the issues that she and other business owners, small business owners, are dealing with this coronavirus situation. Can you expound a little bit on your role and experience, or what you've done with community colleges and maybe how they can help small business owners with what's going on today?
Yeah, sure. First, Greg, I think that we do have the best community college system in the country. The beauty of it is those 58 campuses across our state are in all of our communities. They're close by. Not everybody, when they're trying to open a business, start a new career, get trained for a new career, can afford to or has the capacity to go to a university or a college that's many miles away from their home. So these community colleges provide these services right in our community. So yes, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I would like to see, Greg, is our apprenticeship program go on steroids in North Carolina. I would like to see us in North Carolina lead the nation in apprenticeships, where we put the really the firepower of apprenticeships into the hands of our businesses who are trying to create jobs, allow them to run the program in a way that's most effective for them, really get it out of the hands of government more and get it into the hands of the people who are trying to provide those jobs, incentivize those job creators who are creating opportunities for people to work, paying them while they're doing it and giving them an education while that's going on. So I think apprenticeships are not a thing of the past. I think they're a thing of the future, where we can, in real time, train our workforce for the jobs that exist in our communities today, not these ethereal jobs of the future somewhere that we don't know about. There are actually jobs that exist in our communities today. For example, I'll just give you one quick example. This is broad reaching, but computer science. When we discovered about three years ago, that we really didn't have any computer science curriculum in our schools, not anything that was robust, and we had no computer science standards. We set about making sure that we could create a pipeline for what were 30,000 jobs before this virus hit. 30,000 jobs on the market in North Carolina today for computer science. Some of those students, adults, could go right out of high school into those jobs if they were prepared. Some right out of community college, some through apprenticeships, some through the university system. But we weren't training our students to do that effectively, and all of our education system could be transformed to do that. So today, in fact, we're actually going to be voting on computer science standards at the State Board of Education in just an hour or so. And that's going to transform how we train our students for these jobs that are in the market today, before the virus, $1.5 billion worth of jobs on the market. So whether you're a flower shop or a startup technology company, the community college system should be a significant tool to help you provide for the needs you have for your business.
Thank you. I know that that your work over the past almost 8 years with community college has certainly improved our college system and provided many people with opportunities. Another area that I know that you is kind of near and dear to your heart is the internet and broadband, high speed internet, and working to make sure that everybody has access to that, and especially that is more important probably now than ever before in the history of our state. And I just got a question in that from a business owner in Greensboro that said, is the state prepared to deal with distance learning, and do we have the internet infrastructure that we should have, and that in the rural areas in far east and far west and part of the states, the internet connections and the speed and everything.
The answer is yes and no. Some places are prepared, some aren't. I led the effort within the State Board of Education to create the digital learning plan for North Carolina. We're the first state in the nation to have a digital learning plan, and we had to turn the whole plan upside down. It used to be there, but so we need computers, and there were these dead computers sitting in the corners of classrooms with dust on them because there was no connectivity for those computers and no curriculum and content for them. The teachers weren't trained to use them. We turned it upside down and said, we need connectivity, number one. We need content and curriculum. We need teacher training. And then we need devices. And so I set a goal back a number of years ago. I said we should be the first state in the nation to have every classroom connected to high-speed broadband. And as you know, Greg, we're the second most rural state in the country. And so we actually 2 years ago became the first state in the nation to connect every single classroom to high-speed broadband. That was a huge victory. Media won't tell you about that because it was an effort I was involved in, but it was a big victory for the state of North Carolina and one we should celebrate. Now, I also said the same day that we unleashed that, and we had Ajit Pai down here, the chairman of the FCC, and I said, Commissioner Pai, or Chairman Pai, I said, I believe North Carolina will be the first state in the nation to have the last mile connected. So I think we have our work cut out for us to do this, but we are not prepared right now for virtual learning, distance learning in North Carolina. Some places are, some families are, some families aren't. And so what you're going to see this school year, if our students are trying to learn virtually, you're going to have the haves and have-nots of education. This is why I'm a firm believer. There's multiple reasons why I'm a firm believer our students should be in the classroom. One is because there's no science or data anywhere in the world that suggests otherwise, that our kids are not affected by this virus like older adults are. And so everything points to the fact, including the CDC, that our kids are better off in the classroom than they are quarantined at home. But that being said, you take that out of the equation and say, are we prepared for distance learning? The answer is no, we're not as a overall as a state. And so there will be some students that are learning nothing if they're digitally learning, in their communities, in their homes. So that's something we need to address. Broadband infrastructure is infrastructure, just like a roadway is nowadays. And I think our state has a role to play in making that happen. And, when I'm governor, I want to lead that charge to make sure that we're the first state in the nation to have the last mile connected in our state.
And in addition to that, the distance learning is of course now crucial, but for small business owners in the rural areas, I have members call me that the state has moved over to tax filings, sales tax filings, and permits, and everything's online. Yep. And some of our business owners, we still communicate by fax. I mean, they don't have access to internet. And for the business community, small business owner, it's crucial that we try to move forward with that infrastructure.
Yeah, absolutely, it is. I think I get questions quite regularly. People say, "Well, how come government can't operate more like a business?" I asked him a simple question. I was like, when was the last time we had a governor that was a business owner? Somebody that understands all of the dynamics of what's going on in the business world, or at least most of them. I think that's an important aspect of this. Businesses cannot survive without broadband connectivity right now. That's just a fact, of the matter. I mean, and so if you want our rural communities, our small towns to thrive, that is just a basic. Create a matrix. We should develop a matrix across this entire state for every community that says, what are the needs? How do we connect these communities, whether it's through roadways or through broadband or through rail or whatever it happens to be? How do we connect these communities so that they can be thriving communities for the future? Broadband is definitely one of those tools. Things like natural gas. We had a natural gas pipeline going through our poorest communities in eastern North Carolina, where people need jobs more than anywhere else in our state. And that died because of overregulation and because of environmentalist lobbying. So that pipeline went away. That would have been a lifeblood to that I-95 corridor of eastern North Carolina, where they're desperately in need of good jobs and good manufacturing jobs. And that gas pipeline could have provided that to those communities. I think that's egregious. I think we need to provide the tools that our communities need. We need to work with them as a state so that they can get up and running and get businesses going, and so that people will want to move to those communities. As we've seen, even during this virus, as people are moving to North Carolina from all over the Northeast right now. We're seeing a mass in-migration to North Carolina from people that can work digitally from anywhere in the world, quite frankly. And wouldn't it be great if people could start to populate our small, more rural communities and pump some life into them?
And that's a good segue into the next issue that we've had a lot of questions on, and that's just job growth. Prior to March, we were had one of the lowest unemployment rates in the nation. We had jobs so many jobs available, and people, everywhere I would go, small towns, big towns, wherever, there would be help wanted signs in the windows. And economic development has been something that you have been very involved in, and worked on in your role as lieutenant governor. And it's crucial as the state grows, and hopefully when this pandemic slows down or whatever, it will get back to that. There's a lot of concern about people getting back to maybe the jobs they were in, or jobs will jobs be available for people? That's kind of two different things. One is if you would talk a little bit about just job growth and economic development in the state, and your ideas for recruiting and bringing new jobs in, and then possibly how to get you've already addressed reopening North Carolina, but are people going to get back to work at some point?
Okay. So, yeah, I think, you know, when it comes to growth, as I said, North Carolina is a hot spot. We know that. Yeah, we're on the map now. People are moving here from all over the world for a lot of different reasons. One of those reasons is because of our tax foundation. You know, Greg, we've talked about it on the road before when we went from 44th in the nation to 15th in the nation just by doing comprehensive tax reform here and telling the whole world that we were open for business. That's when everything started to transform as these CEOs and these companies started saying, aha, North Carolina's open. And I want to go there and I want to, you know, I want to set up shop in North Carolina. So that was the first step. And we have to be cautious of that all the time, that a low tax base is really important, that abundant available energy is low cost energy is really important. We're a great state for that as well. That prepared workforce is very critical. All these things in your education and the like. So all those things lined up. I think we need a vision for our state. We need a comprehensive vision that talks about that matrix I was talking about that looks across the whole state, looks at all of our communities, what their needs are, the mega sites, where are our mega sites, where don't we have mega sites, where would they best benefit our state as a whole, and then what are the types of industries and businesses that we want to attract to our state? How do we want to go about doing that? I think we should heavily pursue aerospace. There are two places in the world that aerospace is growing right now, and it's a trillion-dollar industry, and they're growing in Southeast Asia and southeastern United States, and North Carolina dabbles in it, but we should be a leader in it. There's no reason we shouldn't lead that, and we should go after those companies and bring them to North Carolina. We should change economic development from a reactionary model to a proactive model, and we should go out there and pursue the kinds of industries that we want in our state so that we can have a vision for our state and how we grow and how these different communities begin to grow. So that's part one. To wrap that up, it's a vision, a plan, and the right team. Go after it and bring it home. Part two is just what you said. Open the economy. Get it going again. You cannot sustain the level of enthusiasm for our state as everything remains shut down. I believe we should trust the people of North Carolina. I believe that the inconsistencies and decisions, for example, that breweries can open and operate, but bars can't open. I don't know if that's science or politics, but I have my guess on that. When a college football team can work out in their fitness center, their gym, but a gym owner can't open and provide food for their family. I don't know whether that's politics or science, but I have my opinions on it. I think it's immoral for the government ever to tell a business owner that they cannot make a living, that they can't put food on their table and provide a roof over their head. So I think we should trust the American people to do things the right way. Small businesses want to operate the right way. They have more at stake for their customer base than large businesses do. So if Walmart's allowed to open and have 1,000 people in the store, your small business who supports NFIB that sits on Main Street that may have 10 people come in their store a day, they can certainly operate under the same rules and guidelines as a big business can. Trust your people to do the right thing. And if the businesses at some point choose not to do the right thing in a way that is breaking the regulation and is harming somebody, then maybe you do something about that. But I don't believe you should start with the stick. I think you should start with the carrot. So I'm a firm believer we should get our businesses back open and get our economy going again. Again, I hate that I even have to say it, but do your best to protect the people that need to be protected. Over half of our deaths come from nursing homes, something the state controls. This is not out of control of the state. So why are we not spending our time protecting those folks? We're still not doing full testing in nursing homes. Allow the healthy to get back about life. So that's the first step, Greg.
Thank you. Let me backtrack to one thing. We were talking about community colleges and economic growth, economic development, and you were talking about apprenticeships. And a lot of our business growth and small business, I mean, they looking for jobs, they need plumbers and electricians and masons and the technical skills. You touched on the computer science part of it. How can we get our community colleges, or how can we get people move toward these jobs that, that pay really good, provide a really good living for families, but they're just not available.
Yeah, I'll give you two quick, just quick stories, if you will. One is that when I talk to young people, even in schools, I'll ask the question, hey, you want to be a millionaire when you grow up? You know, if the younger kids all raise their hand, they want to be a millionaire. And my answer will be, go be a plumber. Because the opportunity to make $1 million in plumbing is a whole lot greater than the opportunity to make $1 million in political science. And you may, you know, graduate college, four-year degree with $80,000 in debt and a degree that you can't use, whereas you can go start your business, grow a team of people, and make whatever you want to make. There's no limit to the amounts that of money people can make and the kinds of businesses that they could grow. But the challenge is the perception that somehow community college is a second-rate education. You know, you can get a 2+2, we call, this is a term I made up, but 2+2 degree, go to the community college for 2 years, and then go to the university of your choice for 2 years, and you save about 40% of the cost just by starting those first 2 years in the community college, and it's a direct translation one-to-one. That makes sense to me. But what makes even more sense is, you know, those jobs that we call the fixer jobs, where the average age is like 60 years old now, and there's phenomenal opportunities. So we have a perception problem out there that we need to overcome. And I think that's why the apprenticeship model can help overcome that, as it has in other parts of the world. Second little story is this, that I'll sit around a table like, you know, NFIB table or CEO roundtable, and people always ask this question. They say it this way. They say, not everybody needs a four-year degree. Many of our kids just need to go and, you know, get a job and they can work in the trades. And my question to them is always the same. It plays out the exact same way, and I've done this dozens and dozens of times, is, okay, how many of you have sent your kids to community college? And it is rare out of a big audience that any hands go up at all. So the reality is other kids should do that, but not my kids. Well, do you want what's best for your kids? Do you want to have a real conversation with them? If you have an entrepreneurial student who really wants to do something with their hands and wants to make a difference and grow a business, then parents should be leading their kids in that direction. But it's the parents who, you know, want their kids to go to their alma mater, to be able to go to their football games like they did and have the parties and the things that they did, so that, you know, they can enjoy their own college, their kids' college career, their kids can enjoy it the same way. And I think we're doing a disservice to our students by not, our kids, by not directing them in a path that may be best for them. So, again, perception over reality, but we also need to ramp up the reality. We need to make sure we're using our community colleges across the board all the time to train for the most beneficial things that are out there, and providing entrepreneurial types of classes that allow our young people to be creative thinkers as they grow their businesses.
Well, thank you. Let me just, I know you're, be mindful of your time. You've got meetings that you've got to get to, and we appreciate your time. I want to remind our members who are on the call, we've been talking about state issues with the Lieutenant Governor, and we have our fly-in, our D.C. fly-in, which is virtual this year. Of course, no one can go, but they can check that. It's August 17th through the 19th, and they can check that out at nfibflyin.com to register. But I just want to say thank you, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, for your support of the business community, particularly the small business community, over the past 8 years. And you have been a true friend to our members and the small business community. And we could go on with other issues and. Talk about a lot of things, but I know you've got time constraints. If you want to have a couple closing remarks, appreciate that. And from NFIB and our members, we just want to say thank you again.
Well, thank you, Greg. Thank you for always providing the opportunity for me to even get out in front of your members, as we've done in person in the past. I hope we get to do that again real soon. Here. That would be great. Get back to normal there. But just, you know, I would just say thanks for what you do. I mean, We have a great business community in North Carolina, and it's led by our small business leaders, and they don't always get the due that they deserve. You know, we kind of champion the big stuff, the big business wins and the giant corporations and all these kind of things, but it's the small businesses in our state and around the country that make the world go around. And so we know that that's not easy. It's a great sacrifice to most people that do it. I mean, I think people out there think that if you own a business, you're just automatically some rich fat cat and it happened overnight and you didn't have to work for it. And that's just the opposite of the truth, is that everybody on this call, all your members, have to work their tails off for many years before they even reach success, putting their entire livelihoods and life and every dollar penny they have in the bank on the table to make their businesses happen. We know a lot aren't successful. But I appreciate the entrepreneurial spirit of our state and the people of our state that make this go around. So I want to be a resource to you as well, and I want you to be a resource to me. And we're going to continue to work together to get our state back on track, to make North Carolina number one again. And I won't stop till we do that. So thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you, and I hope that you and your family stay safe, and everyone on the call, please stay safe and remember to do what we all need to do to get through this coronavirus pandemic. Again, thank you, and have a great day, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you, Greg. Take care now. Bye-bye.